This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
Midnight, the witching hour, the hour in which evil is let loose upon a sleeping world. Unfortunately, evil has not arrived yet, but we expect Mike Sargent and the Night Shift crew at any moment here at WBAI New York, where the news has come to you on recording. Coming up at 2 o'clock, I suspect, M. Sadia McLaughlin with sports qualified this evening, because she always appears on the last Monday of every month at 4 a.m. Mass Backwards with Max Schmid, featuring music, ballroom blitz style this morning. Yes. We'll look at music of the early to mid-1970s, an episode of Quiet Please, and an episode of Gene Shepherd, including, I believe, a brief tribute to recently deceased newsman whose name just escaped my brain. All right, enough palaver. As we await Mike Sargent, let's listen to an encore edition of Night Shift. Lester Smith. That's Lester Smith, WOR newsman who preceded Shepherd, generally, with the newscast. We'll hear, listen to a little of him on Mass Backwards at 4 o'clock.
To the Liquid Sound Lounge each and every Saturday, starting at 7 and taking you to 9:30 p.m. with yours truly, DJ Jeannie Hopper, and the Liquid Sound Lounge crew, bringing you the finest in rare grooves, new grooves, all kinds of out there grooves emanating from the underground, from the various independent artists doing it for themselves. That includes spoken word and all kinds of great grooves to chill you or make you dance. Show support for WBAI by going to WBAI.org for listener-sponsored non-commercial community radio at its finest. Check it out. Now you know what to do.
Sit down. I'll play you some of the things that I've got. I keep all my sounds cataloged in here. Now, this first one is pretty easy.
You want peace. I want peace.
It's pretty easy to get, actually. The hard things are the real short, quick sounds.
You mean like single words? He gets them all. He's got about 1 million boxes full of sounds on pieces of tape about that long.
You spliced them all together, it might be pretty confusing, huh?
You're all mixed up.
All Mixed Up with Peter Beauchamp.
When?
Every Saturday afternoon.
Here on WBAI.
I tried to explain that to Aunt Ruth, but the connection was bad and our plane was leaving, and she got it all mixed up.
I'm not one of those people who thinks that U.S. foreign policy is all mixed up.
Watch out.
You're all mixed up.
With Peter Beauchamp.
I never dreamed that any mere physical experience could be so stimulating.
All Mixed Up. Saturday afternoons at 5 here on WBAI.
But remember, if you don't bring a pie, you lose automatic.
What would happen if we were not here? What would this country be like? I shudder to think of it.
Hi, I'm Billy D. Williams for WBAI listener-sponsored radio. You're listening to Night Shift, where life is like science fiction.
Executive Order AUC-3423.
Listen to this, boys.
Tasteless, orderless crud.
You have to believe. If you don't, you go to hell.
I don't know who they are or what they are, but they're going to get me, and I'm scared too.
Tasteless, orderless crud.
Education doesn't make you happy, and nor does freedom. We don't become happy just because we're free, if we are, or because we've been educated, if we have, but because education may be the means by which we realize we are happy. It opens our eyes, our ears, tells us where delights are lurking, convinces us that there is only one freedom of any importance whatsoever, that of the mind.
hurry up with that transmission. I want to go to bed.
I suggest that you reach deep down inside yourself there and try and find something that'll keep you awake just a little while longer, because this transmission coming up may just rekindle your will to live.
This is Comm Center. Channel open for executive order AEC-3423.
Listen to this, boys.
Executive Order AUC-3423.
Listen to this, boys.
5627, take one.
Now. Where are my people? 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 Where are my people?
Some red and drink? And a bag of sturgeon?
Now. Where are my people? 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 Where are my people?
Oh, Lord! Get some, gravel.
I think there's no place to hide.
And all the cookies underneath and the hickey.
I'm talking about it, and I have no idea. I have no idea. I have no idea why I'm here. I don't know what I'm doing. I saw something, they saw something. There was a lot of light.
That's all I remember.
Now, where are my people? The 70 billion people of Earth, where are they hiding?
Fascinating.
How long has it been since you've slept?
I don't know. Funny. I never seem to get tired. But I know I haven't slept since this thing began.
It feels like times have changed.
You're tuned to listen to Sponsored Radio. WBAI 99.5
FM.
The name of the show. It only happens here.
Get you out of here. Clear of me.
I think there's no place to hide.
There has to be.
I peddle this damn thing halfway around the world.
Yeah, I'm getting pretty sick of you.
Yes, but you love me.
Night shift again. I'll be damn late. Night shift again. 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 Night shift again.
I'll be damn late.
We love you.
Nothing that we are more focused upon than that you are.
The radio station.
But simultaneously, like the wave of a radio, we are focused.
Focus
into nothingness. We are focused into all things. Contemplate.
We love you.
There is a radio station broadcasting radio frequency. There are many radios, and the music or the voice is equally received by all of them. That is the way we are focused upon you. But we do not worry, we are not bound by thought. Because when we are not with you,
we love you.
We love you, but we don't think of you.
Mondays. Midnight. Till 2 a.m.
That, sir, is illogical.
Don't make me destroy you.
You're tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM, and on the web at WBAI.org.
For those that can listen.
It's 12:23.
Ta-da. That was a cool groove, man.
The name of the show.
Night Shift.
You know, I have to tell. So you got into the groove there, Chris.
Yeah, the groove was good. Did you play Kelly's Heroes earlier?
Now, you know, it's interesting that you said that. You have a very good ear, my friend.
You think?
You think. Now, it was not actually Kelly's Heroes, but you know, the part in the section that I played was very similar to Kelly's Heroes, and it's the same composer. And the reason I played it is because I've really been getting into it. Now, I'm doing an interview with Lalo Schifrin on the afternoon show. And Lalo Schifrin has started a record label where all the soundtracks that he did back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, and most of his music is, a lot of the rights have reverted back to him. And so he's re-releasing them, you know, uncut with full score, remastered.
Wow.
And it's beautiful. And, you know, I'm really into Lalo Schifrin, and listening to all this Lalo Schifrin in the last, you know, whatever, 2-3 weeks preparing for the show has really gotten me into it. And so I'm just going to tell people they should listen this Wednesday from 2 to 3, having the Lalo Schifrin. He'll be live. You know, I know he's been in here on night shift, but I'm doing a Lalo Schifrin show on Real World this week. But that was from Magnum Force, which is, you know, a great score. And I got to tell you, I think, you know, prior to doing this Lalo Schifrin show, I don't know if you remember, Chris, I was talking a few weeks ago, I had watched Dirty Harry again.
Right.
And the thing about Dirty Harry is, you know, it's not a good film, it's a great film. And it's great on so many levels in so many ways, and they're still copying that movie. But one of the things about it is the score. And Lalo Schifrin, nobody writes cool music like Lalo Schifrin. It's just,
so he ripped off his own stuff?
Well, I don't know that he ripped it off.
Not ripped it off, I'm saying.
But like every other composer, yes, he repeats himself in different places. But yes, that whole
drum
thing, it was very reminiscent of Kelly's Heroes because I love the score. But I'm going to play something to you. Oh, shoot. Oh, wait, here it is. Yes. I'm going to play something to you that will blow your mind. And those who are listening, the name of the show is Night Shift. I'm Mike Sargent. I'm here with Chris Taylor on the phone, and Elena is supposed to be here at some point. But I'm going to play something to you, Chris, that you know, okay, as something else completely different, and probably all of those who are, probably anybody who's listening who's lived in New York any time in the last, you know, 30 years will know this music, but you know it as something else, okay? And I was blown away to discover that it was Lalo Schifrin. And it's funny because I had remembered this back when I used to collect soundtracks pretty heavily, and I had forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to play this too. I just got an error message here, of course. Equipment. Let me see if I can. So how are you, Chris?
I'm good. What are you doing?
Well, you know, I have to tell you, last week's show went over so well, and I didn't get to talk about some of my defining moments last week. So,
that's
so this,
true.
This week is going to be defining moments part two. We took a lot of calls last week.
Mm-hmm.
The concept, and this is the theme of the show, we have Life is Like Science Fiction, we have stories, we have music, we have interviews. I have my Iron Man interviews with Rob Downey Jr. and Jeff Bridges, and we're going to talk about Iron Man. But, okay, all right, here it is. Hold on. Here we go. Hold on. I'll come back to my point. I just want this to work. Okay. Anyway, point being that doing night shift here. Chris, you said we've been doing this for coming up on almost 2 decades now?
Yeah, like 18 years.
Mind-boggling. Like, over half our lives.
18, 19 years. We're trying to figure out when we're going to do the 20th anniversary show.
God, oh my God. I'm like one of those people I met at BAI when I came to BAI. I've been here forever. I came with the place, you know?
That's it's deep, man. It's some deepness, man.
It's more than deep. And it's amazing. Certain you know, incumbent producers are still here. You know, they're still
a
here.
Lot of them. I mean, it's fun they're to see... It's fun to see Michio on different, you know, shows.
He's on a whole other level now.
Yeah, it's just fun to see him, you know, talking.
Yeah, we had him on a show. We recorded segments with Michio.
Yeah, had him go up against Richard Hoagland and talk about the concepts of whether the face was really on Mars.
Yeah, this is before
breaking
we,
all that early
before we landed on Mars, of course. So which sounds very science fiction-y and stuff. There. But remember the shows we did before we landed on Mars?
Mm.
So, anyway, I'm going to play this to you, Chris. And like I said, those who grew up here in New York, this should just bring back memories to you. Hold on, let me see. I'm trying to get to it. Are you enjoying this in the background, Chris?
Yes, it's awesome.
Thank you. are starting to get in that groove there, Chris. I get carried away. That wasn't even Lalo Schifrin. That was just more of that DGM. But so yes, and I didn't get to talk about Defining Moments. I was surprised at how many people got to had things to say about what things and what those defining moments meant to them. And basically, a defining moment is a moment in your life where something happened that in a large way helped shape you to who you are today, added quite a bit to the content of your being. So there it is. That's a defining moment. And Chris, I didn't get to talk about any of mine because I had several that I thought of, and you really didn't give any other than you said doing the show.
I said you know, when I got my first studio.
Oh yes, you did. Yes,
in the music
yes,
building, yes, which allowed me to secure my place in the music scene. You know, not realizing
secure
that
your place in the music scene.
Not realizing that, I'd be rubbing elbows and, you know, working with Madonna and just so many, 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 many great musicians that, you know, came through that scene, you know, at a place called the Music Building, and that's where I had my first studio, and then years later going on to getting the other place. But, you know what else I was thinking about listening back to the show? I was thinking
about what?
How defining moments, if you take the time to reflect on them, they can give you inspiration to go and maybe make some more.
Well, you know what else I found, and it's interesting you say that, defining moments. I mean, and to me, you know, I guess everybody has their own personal definition. I'm giving kind of a broad yet specific definition that means something to me. But sometimes there are points in your life where you can get away from yourself, away from who you are. You get caught up in whatever it is, a relationship, a situation, a job, or whatever, a lifestyle. And you need certain things kind of to kind of ground you, bring you back. Sometimes it could be a friend, it could be an old movie, it could be a book, it could be returning to you know, whatever, karate or meditation, something you did. But just something that brings you back to part of the core of who you are, the strongest, you know, building blocks of who you are. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and not only what was really also weird to me is I bumped into somebody when I was out at an antique show in Dutchess County, not this weekend, last weekend, and there was this tall guy walking around, and I went to him. I said, "Why do you look so familiar?" And he says, "My name is Valentino." I was like, "Valentino? He used to rehearse at my studio, you know, 28 years ago."
That's wild.
And we started reminiscing about, like, you know, the whole scene, and just to bring that up. So it's just kind of weird, like you were saying about, you know, different things that can draw you back to a certain place in a certain time, and you don't know, you know, whether or not it's gonna, you know, have a positive or a negative or an inspiration effect on you. So what was your defining moment?
I was thinking of a couple for myself.
You got to be kidding.
What? What?
Really, really got to be kidding with this.
Okay, talk to me.
Come on.
Chris.
You want to invite him on the show?
I think he wants to come down and bring some of those.
I was thinking that.
He sent me a cassette. I didn't get the chance to open it yet, but he sent me a cassette of whatever it is he's got going. Whatever it is he recorded.
Sent you a cassette of his greatest film?
His greatest film and some of the music he's got. And he sent links and stuff, and I saw.
Did he? Did you check any of it out?
I did check out the links of him.
And what is it? What's his?
I have to send it to you. It's impossible to describe. Email me if you want to know. I'll email you something. I cannot spend airtime talking about it. 212-209-2900. And you can call in now, and you can tell us any defining moments you have. And we're going to have an interview with Rob Downey Jr. and an interview with Jeff Bridges that I did for Iron Man. I saw Iron Man. I have to tell you, I'll let it out of the bag. It's fantastic. I thought it was great.
Really?
Easily as good as Spider-Man or Batman.
Wow. Okay?
And depending on your taste, you might like it even better.
Mm-hmm.
So, and much better than you could really expect it to be.
And just a quick snippet for people. What was it like to interview both of those guys?
Well, I will play it to you. I mean, you know, it's funny. Jeff Bridges seems like he could, you know, be a BAI. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
He's like totally in his own world and doing his own thing. But then again, so is Rob Downey Jr. He just, you know, he's just a very, very, you know, memorable presence. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Hello, you're on the air. Hello.
I am so glad I got through to you, Mike.
Uh-oh, who is this?
No, this my name is Mike, too. I'm calling from Long Island.
Okay, Mike.
Well, listen, Stop the Presses, 10 gold stars. I hold you in such high esteem to even being hip enough to know who Lalo Schifrin is.
Uh-oh. All right, you're the man. You know who Lalo Schifrin is, of course.
This is so knocking me out, man. You know, you were talking about, you know, life-changing moments. And I won't say it was a life-changing moment, but to this day, whenever I watch Dirty Harry and it opens up with that Fender Rhodes minor chord thing.
Oh, yeah.
It gives me the freaking goosebumps, man. And Lalo Schifrin is the most awesome.
Yes, he is. All right, so you heard the opening of the show when I played Magnum Force.
Right.
Yeah, man. Totally. When you actually said it, I'm like, oh, there's no way you're going to be hip to him.
All right. See?
And please don't misunderstand that. You're very musically astute. Nice. I don't mean to say that you're not, but I mean, Lalo Schifrin is, it's not obscure. Well, I don't even want to qualify it. I'm just so knocked out. I am going to tape record the show that, on,
oh,
this
you're gonna love
Wednesday.
It. You're going to love it, yes.
It's Wednesday at what time?
2:00. 2:00.
Bro, I really thank you so much, because it's just going to be so awesome. I love where you're at musically. You're so, and I can, I feel like I can't even find my words. Last thing I want to say to you, though, before I do forget, if you can ever interview, of course, now the name went right out of my head, and I love him, not Jerry Goldsmith, not Giorgio Moroder, but the guy, Angelo Badalamenti.
Angelo Badalamenti, you know, I don't know if I actually ever did interview him. I think I had Wilson interview him. But yes, of course, I know him. He'd done a bunch of stuff with David Lynch, too.
Exactly.
Of course. You're talking to the soundtrack king.
Thank you so much, man. This is so totally awesome. Great show. Really excellent. I'm really loving it.
Well, thank you. I'm going to be playing some more Lalo Schifrin. I'm going to play some Lalo Schifrin to blow your mind.
Very good. I will be listening, man.
Do you have a defining moment, sir, that you want to share with us?
Well, Chris, man, you were just talking about how you had that remnant. I'm a musician also, and I've been in and out of studio since I was a kid also. In fact, I've probably been in your studio. I've been every one of them in Manhattan.
You know what's funny, dude, is that I'm deciding whether or not I want to go sit in the second row for Return to Forever's playing at, you know,
are you
South,
kidding me?
Return to Forever's retouring, and they've gone back together, and it's like, you know, they're playing up in Saratoga Springs, and I'm just thinking of, like, going and, you know, and seeing them and thanking them for, you know, because, like, when I was growing up, I hung out with them, you know, when I was like 14 or 15. I mean, they really changed my life just by being so gracious to me and being so nice to me. Like, I wasn't such like some punk kid, you know. They were like,
even though you were a punk kid.
Well, I was a punk kid, but you know, just like, you know, or Louis Belson or Pearl Bailey, you know, hanging out with, you know, with them. Pearl was so nice to me. You know, was like, she was always like, you know, she was like, go home, Chris, and practice. You know, what are you here seeing my husband play? You know, I was like, because I love him. You know, it's like he's just an incredible drummer. You know.
Chris, I am not, number one, I'm a drummer, so I'm totally hit to Louis Belson, and of course his wife Pearl, and a bestie, he was the best double bass drummer in the whole planet.
Oh, just incredible. I mean, it's a shame that the bottom line had closed, because it was so fun to see bands there, you know, through the years, because it was like an intimate, you know, it was an intimate
excellent
place.
Venue. It was such an excellent venue.
You know, if you
I'm
got
so
down there early, you know, if it was whatever kind of seating, a lot of times it was, you know, first come, first serve. So if you got there and you waited online, you know, you got to sit like right there and watch.
Right.
But, you know, Buddy Rich play. I mean, it was, you know, the 1940s or something. So
well, you just mentioned Chick Corea. Did you see him? Were you like rubbing elbows and talking to guys like Dave Weckl, or was it guys after him?
No, David Weckl, all of those cats. Kenwood Dinard, I wound up working for Kenwood for a lot of years. Billy Cobham, you know, I know. And, you know, Lenny White. And
all right, listen. You guys are going to have to trade numbers because we're doing a show here.
Sorry, yes.
Okay, calm yourselves.
I'll let you guys get back to show. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike.
And Richard, real fast, I was saying the defining moment. Dude, Chris, when you and Mike first started the show back in the 80s, you would come on and you made just this passing comment. It was so off the cuff, having not related to anything, but you said, you know something? There's nothing better than a Shure SM58. And I'm like, wow, what does this guy know? And now it all makes sense to me. I didn't know that you had been, you know, that deeply involved in studios and stuff.
You've been listening to the show for almost 20 years?
I swear to God, truly, I've been, you know, I drive a truck at night, and I've been listening to you guys since, like, when you first came on.
Wow.
So anyway, I'm a huge fan. The show is going dynamite. I'm going to listen to the Lalo Schifrin interview, and thank you, man. Thank you very, very much.
All right, Mike.
Later on.
Cool, man.
That's wild, Chris.
That's deep, man. I mean,
seems to happen every time we're on the air together.
Yeah.
Look, Elena came.
Elena.
She's wearing a tight shirt and a pencil skirt.
Is she on you?
No, she's not on me.
Can she hear?
She can hear you. Yes.
Elena, I bought a present for you when I was at this antique show. You're going to freak out. I can't tell you what it is, but I need to get your address so I can mail it to you so that the next time you're on, you'll be like, oh, my God.
Oh.
I was so excited. I saw them, and I was like, I'll take them all.
No.
And I'm not going to tell you what it is. But you're going to love it.
Hello, you're on the air. Hello.
I want to know.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Is this Jeffrey?
People.
Jeffrey, do you have a defining moment?
I do have a defining
one
moment.
One that is not have anything to do with meeting us at that party when we had the night shift.
I know.
Party.
Of course I won't mention that one. Okay. That was not quite. That was not defining. That was significant, but not defining.
Significant, but not defining.
Had I gone with you and Chris that night instead of together cocaine, I would have might have been your friends today. Okay.
Yes. It was a defining moment, Jeffrey.
Well, that's right. He did.
That was not it, though. Chris. Chris.
Yes. Yes.
Are you a drummer, Chris?
Yeah.
I didn't know what your instrument was, man.
Really?
I didn't know always. Wow.
Oh, big time, man. I mean, I can play.
Dude, I've been playing drums, but I guess I can't hold the candle to you because now you're the real deal.
Well, I wouldn't say that, but
you
I just.
You can't hold a candle.
No, but listen, man, I'm going to send you some tapes. Now, how do I get tapes to you? And Mike can listen also.
I'll give you
okay?
the address. I'll give you the
send
address.
Send them to Mike and Michael. Send them to Mike and Michael.
1313 Mockingbird Lane.
I'll never get them at 1313.
No, it's 120
Chris.
Wall Street.
No, Chris, will you
say. Are you sitting there doing your own radio show in the basement, Jeff? Is that what you're doing?
Chris. Well, you're saying, you know, Billy Cobb. I saw Billy Cobb at the bottom line.
Oh,
like
my God, Jeffrey, this is not timing to reminisce.
Okay, listen.
Okay, if you have something to contribute.
Here's the life-defining moment. Here it is. After the second relationship, live-in, six-year relationship ended, I was now free. After 12 years of being a couple, I was then a single man again.
Okay.
And that gave me a new point of view about realizing for 12 years I could never say, what do I want to do tonight? It was always, what do we want to do tonight? But from that point on, I could devote myself more to music, to anything.
So breaking up and being single after 12 years of straight dating was a defining moment, is what you
said. Two six-year marriages.
Two six-year marriages, I hear you.
Right.
Okay, all right. And
all right, guys.
All right.
I'm going to mail you guitar and drums, Chris. You're going to love it, man. I'm telling you.
Send it to Mike.
Yeah. 120
someday.
Wall Street, New York,
someday,
New York.
Chris. You know,
10th floor, 10005.
I said to Elena, she's going to be.
Notice how he's
phone
not paying
you.
Attention.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
The what?
Yeah, you said to Elena how when she gets the president, she'll be calling you on the phone, oh, Chris, when you hear me play these drums and guitar, man, I'm doing stuff that hasn't been done. Okay, Chris?
Oh, you
like
sound like
freak.
That other guy. You sound like
know,
that other
I know,
guy.
I know. It sounds like that weird guy. I know.
Why don't you play the drums for me?
That's funny. All right, people, later.
I think it could be his next six-year marriage.
I think you could.
So, hi, Elena. How are you?
I miss you.
Oh, dear. So, your defining moment, Elena, you going to jump in on this, on the bandwagon tonight?
Oh.
Defining moment in your life that changed your life?
I haven't reached it yet.
She's had no defining moment. She remains undefined. She's like Odo.
I guess her coming to New York would be something in that category, wouldn't you think?
No, it hasn't defined you. It could be life-changing, but it doesn't necessarily define you.
Mm. Yeah,
you're talking
no.
about something that was significant enough to, like, it's part of you now.
Mm. It is. It's part of me. Actually,
what,
I was just talking about it tonight.
Coming to New York?
Moving here and changing my family's lives, changing my friends' lives.
You mean changing your family's lives by you not being in it every day?
Yeah.
And instead giving them a break?
It's a little heart-wrenching, actually.
But how did it define you? I mean, did it cause you to become more independent?
It didn't, because I haven't yet
It did. All right. So do you have a defining moment? That's my question.
No.
Elena.
Yes.
You cannot remain undefined. Some things in your life have defined you. I'm sure of it.
Well, they have, but not in the way I wanted to.
That's not the point. It's not a question of whether it's a defining moment that, you know, we had another guest here last week, and she gave the story of how there was a little boy next door that used to bother her all the time, and then one day she just hit him on the head. And he left her alone. She was 6 years old. It was a defining moment because she realized she could stand up for herself. That's something that changes you. That's something you carry with you. That was a perfect defining moment. Now, you don't have to tell us right now. No pressure. What's the phone number here, Elena?
212-209-2900.
Yeah, well, this weird guy got the biggest write-up in world history for my son.
All right, clearly. Okay, we're going to finally find a reason to bring you in now. Now, tell me about this defining moment for you and why you happened to be there. What year was this? Because this is clearly, of anybody who had a defining moment, this taping this concert was your defining moment. Because this is all you talk about.
I don't know. There were about three defining moments in my life, maybe four. I mean,
well, give me one.
Okay, taping the California Jam.
Now, how old were you at the time?
16.
16. Now, what kind of equipment did you tape it on?
I taped it on a Panasonic RS-736 US.
Now, how is it that you had to have, at 16, you had a piece of equipment like this?
Well, I was the only one in the world, apparently, who showed up at this gig that was bigger than Woodstock with this tape recorder.
No, but I'm saying, why did you have a tape recorder? Why at 16 did you have this Panasonic video recorder? Not many kids had video recorders back in the 70s.
Yeah, well, it was actually a tape deck. It was a reel-to-reel.
Oh.
Yeah, it was like, I think Sony had a similar one out, kind of thing.
Sony, Akai.
And it recorded video on like a reel-to-reel?
Yeah, like on tape.
Oh,
no,
wow.
There was no video involved. It was only audio.
Oh, so you just recorded the audio. You don't have the actual video. You just have the audio.
Videos are popping up on YouTube. Like, you know, they're very good, but they don't match the glory and the quality of what I did at the California Jam.
How many tapes did you make at the California Jam?
I made over 3 hours worth.
How many tapes is that? Is that like three tapes?
It's one.
Really?
Yeah.
So who played? Who?
It was Black Sabbath, Deep Purple, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Rare Earth, Earth, Wind and Fire.
Wow.
The Eagles, and Seals and Crofts, and Black Oak, Arkansas.
Wow.
It's not an idea of wow. It's an idea of this tape has become bigger than the concert itself.
It defines it.
It's become bigger than radio, bigger than television, bigger than media, bigger
That's
than
right.
the newspaper.
Bigger
it's
than
tape.
Him. Hello, you're on the air. Hello, you're on the air.
Who knew that Black Sabbath and Deep Purple were
on the same bill? Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm curious. Are you guys aware of Mojo magazine?
I've seen it.
Mm.
The British music magazine.
Yes, I've seen it.
It covers mostly music from the 60s and 70s. They had an article a couple of years ago, 2002, about movie soundtracks. And they picked like the top 100 of all time. Lalo Schifrin was represented four times.
That's cool.
They liked... They liked Enter the Dragon, they liked Bullet, they liked Dirty Harry.
Enter the Dragon, Bullet, Dirty Harry, all great scores.
And then there's one that I haven't heard. I'm curious. It's called The President's Analyst.
Great, James Coburn film, yes.
I've never heard that.
It's very good.
Apparently, it says awaiting reissue, so I guess you can't.
Yeah, well, he'll probably reissue it himself.
Yeah.
He'll reissue it because he's releasing all this stuff. So thank you, sir.
Okie dokie.
All right. And now, did you have a defining moment, sir?
I can't hear.
Hello, you're on the air.
You know, just looking on the internet real quick, you know the poster with Heath Ledger from Batman where he goes, you know, the poster says, you are so serious, and it's a smiley face. That is a scary, scary poster.
Okay.
Why so serious? Have you seen it, Mike?
No.
Oh.
No.
Oh, you've got to see. When you see it, you'll go. You'll have the same reaction I just did. Whoa!
Are you? Bless you.
Yes. Yes. Bless you, Mike.
Mike. Mike.
He's sneezing.
He's been smelling my hair.
Oh. Can you hear me, Chris?
Yeah, I can hear you, but Mike's sneezing right now.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
He's having a sneezing fit.
Oh, I'll wait.
No, you don't have to wait.
No?
No, okay. Keep going.
Mike, you said the magic word twice. I am going to say it a third time. Robert Downey Jr. He is God on earth. If I were the ultimate casting director of the world, I would give him the part of God, and I believe he can lead the entire human race on the right path.
Well, you must be a fan.
Well, he's my defining moment.
Why is that, George?
Well, because he is such a great artist, and he embodies everything that I would, you know, aspire to.
Well, you're gonna go ahead. Good acting. What else?
Good acting. Honesty in the acting.
Rehab.
You know, a real presence wherever he appears. I saw him in Scanner Darkly. That's the only reason I went to see that movie, and he was incredible in that. As you know, as I knew he would be. That's the only thing actually I've seen him in. And yet, every movie he makes is a step forward. He's so unerring in his choice of material that there is no end to his greatness.
You clearly need to join like the fan club there, babe.
Is there one?
I'm sure.
Well, the music you've been playing is great, and you are going to play the interview with him tonight?
Test complete, preparing to power down and begin diagnostics.
Yeah, tell you what, do a weather and ATC check, start listening in on ground control.
I was aware of him.
Test complete, preparing to power down and begin diagnostics.
Yeah, tell you what, do a weather and ATC check, start listening in on ground control.
Sir, there are still terabytes of calculations needed before an actual flight is advised.
Jarvis, sometimes you gotta run before you can walk. Ready? In 3, 2, 1.
Now that was the trailer for Iron Man, and I have to tell you, I kind of went to see this movie, you know, with no super expectations, because, you know, I thought, okay, you know, it's time, the effects can be good, I like Robert Downey Jr., it's a great cast, I hope it's good, I like the director, I have to tell you, much better than I ever thought it could be, and I went to see it, and I actually went, because I was, you know, I'm an old comic book fan and all that, and I went to the junket over the weekend. And they got to interview Rob Downey Jr. and Jeff Bridges and Gwyneth Paltrow and Jon Favreau and Terrence Howard. I'll play a little of my interview with Rob Downey Jr. and Jeff Bridges. And you're tuned to listen to Sponsored Radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. I spoke to Rob Downey Jr. about doing Iron Man and whether or not he was aware of Iron Man, or whether he was a fan of the comic book and things like that, and about acting with Jeff Bridges.
I was aware of him, you know, in those magazine kiosks and stuff. But what I've been loving hearing lately is, well, Iron Man was always a second tier superhero, this and that. And I'm like, operative word was.
Was there any hesitation in taking this? Was it something you thought, now it's time for me to be a superhero?
I met John and the guys down at Marvel, and then I realized that we were talking about this property. I'm in the hallway on the way out. I'm looking at these posters they have with their films that have done rather well, and the video game section, and merchandising, and the kids' toys, books, and things, and the online gaming. I'm going, wow, this could be cool. And then I was like, John, you know, I think I'm really the guy for this role. And he goes, yeah, I think you'd be perfect. I don't think it's going to happen. I said, well, I think it's going to happen. And let me know if it comes down to a screen test or something like that. It'd be a pleasure. And that's how it went down.
Now, for you, in the script, it's got four writers. What were the things about the script that made it work for you? Like, or what do you feel makes Iron Man work as a film?
Well, having the guys who had just done Children of Men was helpful. You know, they had kind of a dark sensibility, a good story, and a sense of humor too. But often it's not on the day on the set. You know, we would realize that what we had was a good scene and a good tag and the goodness, but there wasn't, now that we were really there and doing it, and as long as it was, you know, $165 million or something like that, it was going to go down the tubes for nothing if we didn't try to make something that was entertaining and cool. We would do what John and I try to do all the time anyway, no matter what kind of movie, which is enhance it and improvise and think of new ways to incorporate different kinds of sensibilities into it. I need this rubber band. Thank you. The physical part was, I'd been, for some reason or other, training for a couple months before, and I've been in a martial arts for 5 years now. So I was kind of up to speed, but it wasn't. I figured if I was ever going to try to like look like I could actually be in shape, I might as well do it before I was too old to have it like be feasible or matter, you know. And it was a physically demanding part, so the training actually really helped a lot. Sometimes I think you just train to be able to survive what you're going to have to do on the job.
I'd understand that there was a lot of improv on set, especially by you. One sequence in particular is a press conference that begins with everybody standing and then ends up with everyone sitting down. And tell me a little bit about that, because from what I understand, that was your idea.
Well, what happened is they lit it one way, and I came in and I said, uh-oh, John's like, Downey, what is it now? We've got to shoot something. And I said, why? I hate the scene where it's like, Mr. Stark, and they're all standing up in the crowd, and I see this scene, and I hate it already. I've seen the scene. And he goes, all right, what do you want to do? I say, well, what if... And this also starts from the scene before where, you know, originally Tony says, Pepper, I'm back, and I want to have a press conference. Whereas I was like, I'm not going to say that. I'll say some other stuff and then mix that in with it, but I'm not going to come out and go, God damn it, Pepper, it's time for a press conference. Because I go, what does he think what he has to say? I don't even think he knows what he's going to say. So anyway, so I came in and I said, look, there's two things I want. I want a cheeseburger, because it's the truth, I hear, when people get out of the joint or come back from long stints. And that's what happened to me after we did this world tour. I came back from the Waldorf. They go, anything, Mr. Nego, did you? I said, I don't know, two things. I want a cheeseburger. Anyway, I don't know. And I said, no, and I'm going to have press conference. So he got what he wanted, and I didn't have to hate it.
Tell me a little bit about working with Jeff Bridges. Was that one of the other great things about working on this movie?
No, it's great, too, because, you know, Jeff came in, and he would, like, be like, guys, we should improvise on the scene. We're, like, we've been shooting in 2 weeks. We're, like, still figuring out what the sequences are. And we got two Raptors, and he's fighting the F-22s. I'm like, I don't know. What? How? Why? And Jeff's like, look, I got this thing, this Alan Watts lecture I downloaded on my iPod. We should, like, check. It's like 2 hours and 10 minutes. And anyway, he wound up really, really bringing us to where we felt like we had permission to do what we all wanted to do anyway, which was get to know each other, talk about this stuff. He said, I'm not fixing to show up here and be like that two-dimensional bad guy. So as it happens, you know, he's kind of like, you know, the dude meets Dr. Doom. I mean, it's awesome, you know. We talk about that tokamak reactor, and we said, what is the tokamak? Every time we got to the thing, we were like, what does that mean? And we're like, oh my God, no, let's go to the origin story, go to the thing. We're like, wait a minute, it should move me. But the tokamak reactor is the thing they built to shut the hippies up, but as it happens, it winds up saving his life. So it's hard to say what has value at the end of the day when you're in the clinch. And it was really just some of my favorite stuff because, you know, I've come up and I'm a little younger than Jeff, but he's always been someone who I've seen have this very interesting, balanced career. He's a national treasure.
Now, I spoke a little with Jeff Bridges about his process and how he approaches what he does. And what it was like for him to work with Rob Downey Jr., and why did he do a movie like this?
So what made you want to take on this character, and what did you want to do with it, and what did you not want to do with this character?
Well, I wanted to shave my head, because I thought that'd be fun. I always wanted to. But what did I want to do with it? Well, you know, really, what brought me to the party was wanting to play with Jon Favreau and Robert Downey, those two guys. And I thought, you know, in this genre, you know, comic book movie, I remember when I first heard about it and heard that Jon Favreau was going to be involved, that combination seemed so peculiar to me. I was curious to see what John's take on it was, and he told me what he had in mind, that he wanted to cast Robert Downey as Iron Man, and that sounded so odd to me and so intriguing, and that's why I'm here, basically. And as far as what I didn't want to do, what I did want to do with it, let me see, what did I want to do with it? Well, I wanted to shave my head. We just got that one out. What I didn't want to do with it.
Part of why I asked is because Rob Downey Jr. mentioned that he came and said, I want to do this two-dimensional villain.
Oh,
on your iPod. And he said you helped create the tone of getting...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know about, you know, wanting to do things. I bring everything I have to the party, you know, and then they get to pick and choose, you know. I guess they're, you know, sometimes, you know, it's almost like a surfing or something. I don't know why that analogy came to mind, but it's like you're taking off on a wave, and you gotta act, you know, kind of quick, and sometimes you'll think, you know, I want to turn. Oh no! If I turn there, you know. So the mustache twirling would be like, oh, a misstep in surfing sometimes. You know, I think, oh, you know, you don't want to do that. But you talk with the director, and he helps. You work as a team, and they kind of guide you, you know, along with it. Well, one of the things, this kind of is a roundabout way to get to your question, but one of the things I like about the movie in general is it's full of interesting themes. But it's not shoving a message down anyone's throat, you know. People who are kind of anti-war have that sentiment. They'll look at the film and say, "Oh, it's a, you know, an anti-war film." Other people who are kind of gung ho and, you know, are kind of pro-war will say, "This is a pro-war film." You know, so there's a lot to be seen and gleaned out of this thing, and hopefully promote discussion. You know. So with my character, what I didn't want to, like you say, maybe this goes to your twirling of the mustache. I didn't want to make it so clean. Nothing is so clean like that. I think we all have selfless and selfish aspects of ourselves. And sometimes it's hard to differentiate which is the good guy and which is the bad guy, you know. I think with Obadiah, I think he thinks of himself as sort of a hero in a sense, you know, that, yeah, I'll be the bad guy, you can blame me, and I'm the reason that all this is in place. I'm holding this all together, and you can blame me all you want, and I can take it, because that's how tough I am.
I honestly thought at one point he was going to do the thing, oh, and by the way, I killed your parents.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah, because there's always, you know, superheroes always have the dead parents, you know.
What is the expression? You got to break a couple of eggs to make an omelet. You know, he's up for that. You know what I mean? It was a complicated relationship. I think, you know, one of the things I do sometimes to prepare for a role, and I did it in this one, is I write a history of my character. You know, and I kind of let it just flow out. You know, don't think about it too much. And what came out was that they had a kind of a father and son, you know, or an uncle, you know, nephew, you know, relationship. He kind of raised, I mean, my mind, the story that I had going on in my mind, that Obadiah, you know, sort of was his surrogate father that kind of raised him, you know, probably got him laid the first time, taught him how to drive, you know, took him out on, you know, adventures with him. As, you know, his father was, you know, too busy, and he would kind of assign Obadiah to do that for his son. So they had a very, you know, close relationship. But there was also a lot of jealousy there too. Yeah.
I want to ask a Jeff Bridges, the artist, question. You write, you draw, you take photographs, and you're a great actor. But each one of those, I kind of believe that every artist, you know, if they go into some other medium, they'll achieve some level of excellence there as well. So how do these things feed you, like, or, and make you maybe more whole to do all these different things and, you know, touch and do this and that?
Well, I became an actor really through nepotism. You know, my father, Lloyd Bridges, had C. Hunt, you know, and he was, pretty darn famous. And like a lot of actors, he loved acting and wanted to turn his kids on to it. And he really wanted all his kids to, you know, thought it was worth going through any of the humiliation that you might have to go through or any of the hassles or whatever it might be, disappointments and so forth. And whenever there was a part for a little kid in Sea Hunt, he would say, "Hey, you know, you want to come and play with Dad?" And I said, he says, "Well, you know, you get to get out of school." Oh, okay. You know, that was the big turn on for me back in those days. So I kind of just fell into it. You know, it was like about, you know, a cobbler would bring his kid in to build some shoes or something, and that was kind of the thing with me. And so, just like, you know, most kids, I went through a period of, you know, maybe I don't want to do what my parents want me to do. You know, what else do I want to do? And so, I played music. I thought about being a musician, a photographer, an artist. And that lasted kind of late in my career. I mean, I had maybe done 10 films with that kind of thought, not knowing if I was going to really be an actor for the whole deal, you know. And then this is kind of a long story, but you opened a big box here, but trying to see if I can truncate this thing. There was a turning point during The Iceman Cometh, where I really didn't feel like doing the movie. I ended up doing it, had a great time, and it kind of made a shift in my thinking that, this is something I could do for the rest of my life as a career, and hopefully these other interests would still keep cooking, you know, that they wouldn't die. And they didn't, you know, they kind of hung around, and for a while they would be, I found them kind of distracting, you know. I would be working on my lines and all of a sudden get an idea for a song and find myself playing a guitar or drawing a picture or something like that. And I would be upset with myself, say, "No, get back to work." And then I came to realize that they're all connected, like you were saying, and that when you start to engage creatively, it shakes up all your juices and you start to express yourself and then your ideas start to come out in all different ways. And now I don't suppress it. They kind of all inform each other. They all kind of work together hand in hand. And I find that, with music, I'll often, you know, do music in movies or draw, you know, in Fearless. I remember one day I found myself I don't know if you saw that movie, you know, but I found myself going out and buying a bunch of art material, papering my room with big sheets of paper and going at these pieces of paper with ink, but in character, sort of like an improvisation on another medium almost. And I went down to breakfast that day with, you know, the next day with Peter Weir and said, "Look what happened in my room last night." He goes, "Oh, these are great." He said, "These are in the movie." We'll put these. So those are, you know, incorporated in the movie. So they all kind of go together. That's a long answer. Sorry about that.
What'd you think, Chris?
That was awesome.
You enjoyed it.
That was awesome. You know, it's so funny. It's like you really got him to open up, and I was excited to hear him talk about his dad and
he talked about Lloyd Bridges. Yeah.
Yeah, it was just really, you really got him to think about and open up. It was nice, man. It was same with Robert. You got them thinking about, you know, you're not just a regular, "Hey, man, what do you think about your movie?" It's like you got them thinking. and talking.
Well, I won't name names, but I have to say there's certain journalists, when you're in a round table or forget a press conference, where they have the innocuous questions, you know, just stupid.
Right.
You know, and I've definitely seen a couple, like Vincent D'Onofrio, I remember, he did this movie called The Cell.
Yeah.
And I interviewed him, and I interviewed, what's her name? Jennifer Lopez.
Jennifer Lopez.
And, and at one point, somebody, you know, it was a fairly small round tables. Round tables are basically where several reporters get to ask, you know, the star, the director, producer, you know, questions in round table style. It could be anywhere from, you know, four to 12 sometimes, you know, depending on...
Mm-hmm. That's a big round table.
Yeah, sometimes, I mean, they've had it crazy to be like 20 people. That's rare, like, but that's like James Bond, you know, you need to have 20 people in the room, that kind of thing, unless you get to do your one-on-ones. And then sometimes people are there and they don't really have, you know, they're just there to get sound bites. They don't really have to ask any questions, so if you've got an agenda, you can, you know. Anyway, yeah, there are definitely people who ask, like...
So Vincent D'Onofrio.
I'm sorry, right? Vincent D'Onofrio. So, and somebody asked him a question, and he said, what kind of stupid-ass question is this? He
said... Well, he really knows his stuff.
Oh,
so
he's...
Like,
he does not suffer fools, let me just say
right.
that. What were you going to say, Elena?
What did Jeff Bridges look like?
He looked great. He looked great. He looked healthy. He looked, you know... He looked great. I mean, you know, he's got some gray in his hair now, but he looked like Jeff Bridges. He was very, very relaxed, very much, you know, very at ease with who he is. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, you would have had a good... I should have sent Elena. Elena would have, like, latched onto his leg.
or anything that...
anything. Right?
Well, it was interesting also, like, how you, you know, correlated, like, what... Downey had just, you know, said,
mm-hmm.
and then you brought that in, which had to definitely make you stand out to in Jeff's mind to be like, yeah, this guy's on it, and I gotta like really give him my all, and that's what I thought was cool, man, because it was like you just, you know,
well,
it's cool.
I couldn't say one way or the other, but
that's just my vibe on it, man. Okay, man. That's
all right, no, I'll take it. I'll take it. So Iron Man opens Friday. I highly recommend it. Go see it. Really, really well done. Really, really good. Really, really fun. You don't want it to end. You'd like to see easily 2-3 more of these.
I mean, I would have just been going, Tucker's the greatest movie I've ever seen. Tucker was like a defining moment in my life.
When I
saw Tucker, every time I watch it, it inspires me to just do something and accomplish something. Jeff, you're just amazing. That's what I would have been saying.
Well, you know, it's funny when you see certain actors, like you've seen them so long on screen that as you're talking with them in your mind, you're running through various movies that they were in. I'm thinking,
oh yeah,
I'm thinking Thunderbolt and Lightfoot. Yeah, it was Clint. You know, your
or the morning moment. After.
The morning,
that was happening to me, you know, when I was interviewing Woody Allen, that was happening to me. I was like, I kept leaning in just going, this is just like a film right now, you know? He's like, oh, yeah, I just want to just, you know, talk
So about you really it. Like Tucker?
Yes, I love Tucker.
I love Tucker, too.
Love Tucker.
And it's hot.
You know,
the way Jeff Bridges, like, swayed his hair.
You know, it's like Tucker's like the American dream or something. Like, you know, you want to go out there and do something right for people. And you get shut down. It's sad.
Well, you're tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. The name of the show is Night Shift. We've just been speaking with Rob Downey Jr. and Jeff Bridges for the new movie Iron Man coming out this Friday, directed by Jon Favreau. Interesting, I forget the... I have to look at my press notes to how to pronounce the name, but the composer of the film, which I didn't get the score, but the composer, same composer for Prison Break, which I really enjoy, and I enjoy the score to that as well. Something like that, exactly, I'm with it. The theme of the show is defining moments, you know, and we kind of kept that theme going. I also have a lot of life is like science fiction. The world seems like times have changed. What's the phone number here, Lena?
212-209-2900.
Hello, you're on the air. Hello? Okay. Elena, you have a story?
Do you want me to go first?
Sure. I have so many. I could just read headlines to you. shape-shifting robots take form. And then they have, like, see a video of the modular robots reassembling when kicked apart. If that's not scary Terminator, you know, what was that movie with Tom Selleck and Gene Simmons? All right, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's really weird that you just mentioned that.
Jerry did the score, yeah.
What was,
I don't remember.
Oh, I'll look it up.
You. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. You're talking about the Iron Man movie?
Yes.
Yeah, I've seen a few of them. It looks the same. I mean,
It's great. That's all I can tell you. It's great. I love it.
Yeah, but like the robot, you got the big giant robot. You've seen it in all the movies. I've seen it previously, but not.
You weren't impressed. That's good. You know what? Going to the movie, not looking. I went in with no expectations. That's good. Don't listen to me. Go in thinking, yeah, you know, whatever. Iron Man, Schmion Man. And, you know, I think you'll enjoy it more. I think when you have low expectations, you always enjoy a movie more.
Yeah, because the late. Robert Downey Jr., but, I mean, it don't look like he's playing it. He's doing a good job in playing Iron Man, you know. I mean, not the Iron Man character, but, you know, whatever the guy's name, John.
Again, you've only seen the trailers. It's Tony Stark. And he, all I can tell you is he's great in it, but, you know, go see it, judge for yourself. Call back here next week.
But you know, like the movie that was coming out called Will Smith, it's called Hancock. You seen the previews of that?
Yeah.
Yep.
Hancock.
Yep.
Yeah, I've seen a few.
Hancock is basically the part two to Legend.
Legend.
It's part two to Legend.
Don't stop.
Isn't it?
No.
Wait, what is it called?
I thought Hancock was part two to Legend.
No, you didn't.
No, it's not part two to Legend. No, it's not.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Oh, it's not?
No. How you know? What?
Chris, stop playing with him. Hello, you're in the air.
You know, Runaway is the name of the film, by the way, Tom Selleck.
Yes, hello, who's this?
Yes, my name is John.
No, it isn't. This is Danny.
What's going on, Danny?
I was thinking about you, man. I was.
Danny, did you hear my Iron Man interview?
You, but I thought about you.
You hear the Iron Man interview?
Yes, of course.
Did you enjoy it?
I'm looking forward to it.
Danny, I'm telling you, you're going to love it, son. You're going to love it. You're going to love it. It's your kind of movie. That's all I got to tell you.
Damn, am I right? What? Hancock is part
shut
two
up, to... Chris.
All right.
I got a question about Star Trek.
Okay.
Why did they change the date?
It's not ready. I'd rather them push it back. Get it right. That's why. That's usually why. I'm with that. When's it coming out now?
They say it's May 8th, 2009.
Well, that's a good sign. When they move a movie from the fall to May, they have a lot of faith in it. Because then they think it's a summer tentpole movie. But Star Trek films traditionally would come out in, you know, late in the year. And when they released a couple... in the summer, they didn't do that well. So let's hope that they break that trend.
So, yeah.
So, Danny.
Hancock is not part two. I'm just kidding.
Danny?
Yes.
Can you give me a defining moment in your life?
The defining moment in my life happened in February of 1992.
Talk to me.
When I first tuned in to 99.5 FM.
Ah, Danny.
Nice.
It helped him. You know, Danny listens to us when he's down in the foxhole. He's listening to Night Shift.
He's listening right now. He's down in the foxhole.
He'd be like in Kelly's Heroes when they're playing that rock music. He'd be playing Night Shift, you know. You'd hear us taking a call. He's shooting tanks and, you know, and machine guns. And you hear Night Shift blasting through the speakers of the tank.
That's when it sounds good.
There it is. Yes, it always sounds good with carnage in the background.
Yeah.
Danny, how are you, man?
All right, Chris, how are you?
I'm good, man. You must be in love, man. That's why you've been hiding out, man. Danny's in love, Mike.
Danny's in love?
Yeah, man.
Did you take the love boat?
He's on a love boat, man. I know.
Love boat.
You know, they're releasing Love Boat on DVD now. Hallelujah. Love Boat and Love American Style are on DVD now.
I love that show.
I love them both.
Love American Style. It's great to see her on Coke and everything.
Oh, stop. That's Love Boat. That's Love Boat.
No, that's Love Boat.
Love Boat. Hallelujah.
Love American Style.
No, Love American Style.
That's me. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We have to come over and watch Love American Style. Hello, you're on the air. Hello.
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 Hey, how you doing?
Hey, who's this?
This man is Andrew.
Andrew, you have a defining moment for us, Andrew?
I'm sorry?
You have a defining moment from your life, Andrew.
From my life? No, but I had a defining moment on Thursday because I went to go see that movie, Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
And
I was watching the trailers, and there's a trailer for this new movie with Angelina Jolie. I think it's called Wanted and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And they got Morgan Freeman in the trailer, and they're talking about how they're like this clan of assassins, and they believe in if you kill one person with one time, like, then they'll save thousands of lives. And I was shocked to hear, like, that kind of, you know, thought or theory from, like, a Hollywood film. I was, like, totally blown away, because usually, you know, I don't know, they just don't preach that kind of weird ideology.
Well, I would disagree. I mean, I would say there's some pretty interesting ideologies that have been preached in many, many movies. What was the ideology?
I agree with that. I'm just saying, like, I've never heard that particular one, that you could kill one person. I don't know, it was really weird. I'm just sitting in the theater, and I was sitting because it was a matinee, and I was all alone, and I'm just looking around, and no one else was there, and I'm just like, this is some weird stuff for Hollywood movie.
You need to see Wrath of Khan, The Needs of the Many.
Yeah,
The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the one. But go ahead, I'm with you.
Okay, cool, man. I just wanted to say, you got a great show, man. Thanks.
All right, thank you, man.
Hey.
Well, what's your name?
How you doing?
What's your name?
Are you
Andrew?
Cute?
Andrew.
I'm very cute. Are you cute? That's the question.
I'm totally cute.
She looks like one of the, she's the lost Olsen twin, you know?
Yeah.
No way. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, she does.
She does.
Third twin. All right,
she's like an Olsen twin.
I'll keep calling and keep listening. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. You can come and see my sweater.
Oh, I will. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew.
Bye, man.
Hello, you're on the air. Hello, you're in the air.
I saw a movie last night with Ben Affleck, Angelina Jolie, and Al Pacino. Takes place in L.A. I don't remember the title of it. Do you know it?
No.
Hmm.
But okay. What did you think of the Robert Downey Jr. Interview?
Fantastic. Perfect. And one of the reasons that made it perfect as well, not only the incisive questions that you put to them, you know, which really stirred them up and got their creative juices going, it was marvelous. You were not playing, I was thanking God, any background music.
All right, well, there it is.
And it was perfect, Mike. A great interview.
All right, thank
and
you,
And did you see this Angelina Jolie movie?
No,
Al Pacino?
No.
Ben Affleck? There's a retarded kid that they get involved with, a gangster. A terrible movie. You don't know the name.
Was that Gigli?
That's what it was.
That was Jennifer Lopez, not.
That's Jennifer Lopez.
Not Jennifer Aniston. That's what threw me off there, babe.
Oh, Jennifer. What did
no,
I
he
say?
Said Angelina
you
Jolie.
Said, you said Angelina
Jolie.
Oh, I said
Jolie. Angelina Jolie. Huh?
Jennifer Lopez, Christopher Walken.
Jennifer Lopez doesn't look anything like Angelina Jolie.
It was a terrible movie. I didn't like it at all. Okay, thanks a lot. Great interview. Marvelous.
Thank you, George.
There you go.
Hello, you're on the air. Hello.
It's a hard question. You know, this one about the taping, the California Jam, the biggest mega concert. You know, you asked me a hard question. I don't have the answer. It just doesn't add up.
Well, here's my question to you.
Yeah.
At 16, what were you doing that you had recording equipment of that level?
Actually, I was taping some other radio. I bought the machine, about 4 months before the concert happened. So I have, like, other reels of radio from late 73.
Now, how did you get radio into the tape recorder? What was your connection?
I used the same receiver that I use today. Panasonic.
You went from the stereo out the... Or XLR, what'd you do?
Yeah, four copper wires, short copper wires. I still have all the equipment.
That's interesting, Chris.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't add up. I mean, anybody in the world could have done what I did. And when I first came on the internet, you know, doing a little research about the California Jam, I figured there'd be thousands of recordings like this. And when I couldn't find thousands, I thought maybe there'd be hundreds. And then I found out there was only one, and that was mine.
Well, there it is. Hello, you're on the air. Hello, you're on the air.
You are very interesting, Mike.
How so?
You just are.
Hello, you're in the air.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
Listen, couple of fast questions. I got a terrible connection. I called you earlier, but I'm having a hard time hearing you. I'm in my car. So here's the fast question. Number one, first of all, excellent interview with Robert Downey, man. That was superb. But having said that, why is it that you sound like the guy you're interviewing, Robert Downey, he sounds mic'd, but you don't sound mic'd? I don't know if you're aware of that or not, but it's like a real uneven level. Like, you can't... It's kind of hard to hear you. You sound like there's a room mic just barely ambiently picking you up, but they're close mic. Did you get mic yourself?
When you do a junket, generally you patch into whatever microphone they have. They have a molt box, and you patch in to it. Now, I brought my own microphone, but I didn't bring two, you know, for myself, because it's just not really done unless you're doing 101. And so what I did is some of my questions that were a little too ambient, I re-recorded. So you might have heard a couple of times I sounded clear and well mic'd.
Yes, I heard it. I heard it. It sounded like an edit. Yeah, I heard it.
Well, see, a lot of times what some people do is, that also go on the junkets, is they just write down the questions, and then they go back, and then they ask the same question that somebody else asked, and then they just redub it in. You just bring up the actual interview, so it sounds like they're interviewing the person if you do it slick enough. So. But it's just you're still getting the same information. It's just it's the way things are done, right, Mike? That's what.
Yeah, I got you.
It does.
Yeah, maybe that might be an idea because it was kind of hard to hear some of your questions at times. But nevertheless, great interview. Two things. Do you guys have a website?
Yes, we do. LifeIsLikeScienceFiction.com.
And you got.
What's that? I think he just
asked
this.
Taken to the.
He says, and the secret of the universe.
They've triangulated my position. Exactly. Wait.
And the treasure is buried. What's the phone number here?
212-209.
I figured out earlier what Chris actually does for a living. You know what he is?
No.
You know how they have those guys who go in the water and they go treasure hunting? He does it on land.
I'm not. It's
or in his bathroom.
You know what? If I was down in Florida, I would be diving every day.
Yeah,
of course you would.
You'd be treasure hunting.
Yeah, I love it.
You're a freaking pirate.
I want to know where my present is.
Let me just tell you something that I just got, which I think is really, really, which blows my mind, is that I bought somebody's old stock from 1904, where it was $1 a share, and they had 1,000. Shares in 1904, that means they paid $1,000 for this, in the Consolidated Gold and Copper Mining Company in 1904. They had other stock too. The same person had like two other stock certificates for 500 shares each.
But those aren't worth anything.
No, they're not worth anything, but it fascinates me how it just fascinates me how somebody had $1,000 in 1904 to invest in the gold and copper mine.
That's true. Hello, you're in the air.
Hi, great show.
$1,000 is like $1 million. Are you enjoying
exactly? The show? I mean, you know, that's my point. $1,000 in 1904. How much is what's the equivalent? That, does anyone know the answer to that?
No.
Like $100,000. All right, and sir, what's your name?
Oh, you're George from Manhattan.
George from Manhattan. Are you enjoying the show?
Yeah, thank you.
Do you have a defining moment?
The first job I ever had was a long time ago. That was a defining moment.
The first job you ever had?
Yeah, that was kind of a shock. And getting my first paycheck.
Yeah, I can understand that.
That was like real, like, well, then, you know.
You're getting money for your time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty strong defining moment. Especially if you became like a multimillionaire, then you'd be like, yeah, that's it, I want to make money.
But I want to thank you for the Iron Man interview.
Oh, you're into the Iron Man interview?
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I like both those actors.
Great. And Robert Downey Jr. is starring in a film that's coming out soon. Do you guys know the title?
He's got two films coming out after Iron Man. He's got one is a comedy, a war comedy with Ben Stiller and a bunch of other people. And then he's got another one coming out that he's doing with Jamie Foxx.
That's the one I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's a drama.
What's happening with that?
They're both in the can. They're both going to be released soon.
And what role does Robert Downey Jr. play in that film?
He plays, I think, I don't remember whether he's a, if he's a music producer, but he's a fairly successful man.
Is it Tropic Thunder? Is that the one?
No, that's the comedy.
That's the comedy of Ben Stiller.
Yeah, with Ben Stiller. Right. But he plays a man who finds a once famous musician.
The soloist.
The soloist.
Right.
The cellist who's like down and out.
Right.
And he helps him get back on his feet.
Right.
So that should be interesting too. I think Downey always does interesting work.
Yeah.
And I like him.
Yeah. Well, do you know when that's coming out or the 2 months?
I think that comes out in the summer.
They're filming it right now.
No, they're not. That's
what it says, filming.
Well, that's because it's not updated.
Are they in post-production?
They're in post-production, yes. All
right.
And he's also in The Incredible Hulk.
He's got a cameo as the same character.
Also, this is a little bit off topic. What do you guys think of a movie called Billy Budd, based upon Herman Melville's novel, made in the early 60s?
You know, Paul Wonder was very much into that movie. I've never seen Billy Budd, but...
Peter Ustinov directed and starred.
Yeah, I know.
And the late, great Robert Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, Robert Ryan.
Yeah, what do you guys think of Robert Ryan?
He was a good actor.
He was great. Great actor. Yeah. Great cowboy.
Right.
I like that Peckinpah Western he did.
Mm-hmm. Which one
was
that?
Well, he did two. He did Wild Bunch, and he also did...
The other Wild Bunch.
The other one. I forgot the one he did before that in the 60s. Before Peckinpah was like an institution.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think of two of the great scenes of the Wild Bunch?
If they move, kill them.
Well, there's a great bridge scene in the Wild Bunch where they... Sam Peckinpah had a thing about doing a slow-mo.
Mm-hmm.
And,
Ride the High Country. That was the one with Robert Ryan.
Oh! No, great. Ride the High Country was, Randolph Scott, Joel McRae.
Oh, you're right. That's Randolph Scott and Joel McRae.
Randolph Scott and Joel McRae.
Right. Sorry, but that's a great movie.
What did you think of that Western?
That was great. Great. You know, some of the best Westerns were the ones really, like, I guess, like any genre, that really dealt with character and you know, characters approaching either definition or change in their life. And usually it's a redefining, you know, so staying in line with our topic. Those are both great movies. Wild Bunch is great, you know.
Ride the High Country
is great. I mean, and it's obviously a theme in Peckinpah's work. Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid is great. It's times have changed.
Right.
Because, you know, that's what was happening, you know, in Ride the High Country. You know, he's getting old. Wild Bunch, you know.
Right.
You know, their time had come and was past now. And,
right.
You know, he was getting older. And Pat Garrett, Billy the Kid, you know, half the bad guys have been recruited to sheriffs and we're getting rid of the rest of the, you know,
exactly.
Outlaws. So, you know, that's definitely a theme, I think, with Peckinpah.
I don't want to keep you too much longer, but...
Straw Dogs, another one.
Oh!
Great film.
Straw Dogs, yeah.
A man has to kind of redefine his manhood, you know, all that.
Yeah.
What were we going to say there, Chris?
Well, Dirty Dozen had Robert Ryan in it, right?
Dirty Dozen?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
He was in it.
All right. Well, there it is.
What did you think of the relationship between Randolph Scott and Joel McRae in Ride the High Country?
That was great. Great, great film. Great film. Great relationship.
Yeah.
Great.
Who wrote? Do you know who wrote the script for that?
No. Probably somebody like a Sterling Silliphant. I don't really know. Chris is Mr. IMDb, so he can...
I'm looking up. You know, I'm looking up Billy Budd. I didn't know Peter Ustinov.
He directed it.
Directed that.
Yes, he did.
Wow.
I didn't realize that.
Starred. He played the part of Captain Veer.
Wow.
Robert Ryan.
A lot of those famous actors of the time, and especially the 50s, 60s, early 70s, they all got a shot at directing.
Yeah.
You know, Marlon Brando did. His was not successful.
I saw One-Eyed Jack.
That's
One-Eyed Jack. What do you guys think of One-Eyed Jack?
Jack Nicholson did. He got to direct, and, you know, it didn't go anywhere. The Two Jakes. You know, but they all get a shot.
Have you guys seen One-Eyed Jack?
I never saw One-Eyed Jack. Did you, Chris?
Yes,
but
I
did. I bought it for 99 cents.
Yeah, I bought it for 99 cents. I watched it. It was all right. Kind of weird.
All right. Now, life is like science fiction. I have a couple stories for you, too. Now, what do you think of this? Shape-shifting robots.
Yeah, I want to know about that.
Take form. How would you like to have your own shape-shifter? Perhaps a liquid metal T-1000 Terminator to help around the house. or a universal toolkit that could reshape itself into any implement at the press of a button. For an astronaut in orbit, an army mechanic in a remote terrain, or even a homeowner trying to fix a furnace on a cold winter night, it could be just the thing. Well, one day maybe. And they've got something what they call reconfigurable robots.
What's that?
It takes advantage of recent advances in robotic hardware communications and remote control. And they have like a video, and you can see that the where they kick this modular robot, mm-hmm. it's all made up of parts, they all move and they all interlock, and they all have a memory, and they all will come back together.
Yeah.
And reform themselves.
Like an orgy.
If that's not life is like science fiction, I do not know. And then I also have a story on the latest water war.
Water war?
Water wars.
Where?
Ah, okay, Barcelona. It says here, as Barcelona runs out of water, Spain has been forced to consider importing water from France by boat. This is the latest example of the growing struggle for water around the world. The water wars. Barcelona and the surrounding regions are suffering the worst drought in decades. There are several possible solutions, including diverting a river and desalinating water. But the city looks like it will ship water from the French port of Marseille. The Water Services Authority in Marseille say that no contracts have been signed, and they would not say how much the water cost, although it is unlikely it would cost any more than it costs the inhabitants of Marseille, and the amounts of water have been discussed are small, 25,000 cubic meters, less than what's needed to grow an acre of wheat, and not enough to keep 30 Spaniards going for a year, based on the average consumption. But the proposal is interesting because it turns a local drought into an international situation. Climatologists predict that certain regions, the Mediterranean basin being among them, will increasingly suffer from water shortages as global temperatures are pushed up by greenhouse gas emissions. Okay. Combined with reports that water scarcity can escalate conflicts, the forecasts have raised fears that climate change could bring about water wars. People will not fight over water, says Mark Zitton from the London School of Economics Center, but it's not to say water shortages will not contribute to existing tensions. This is already happening. Zitton advises the Palestinian authorities in their water negotiations with Israel. The latter controls 90% of the two territories' shared water resources. The fact that the Palestinians are deprived of their water doesn't help the situation. Now, you got to remember, worldwide we've been having riots over the price of food.
Yeah, Haiti and
Now, this is a fairly serious situation. This is the world we're living in. I have to make a comment. You know, I'm not anti-American, and I don't subscribe to that. Oh, to hell with America. America's screwed up. No, I don't want to live anywhere else. But, you know, the way we live in this country, the amount of waste, I got to tell you, when you go to these junkets, they have the food laid out. They got the this, the that, the studios, you know, they pay for all this food. But, you know, all hotels, you go to any luxury hotel, you have an event, they spread out food. If maybe 30%, 50% of it is eaten, the rest, even 70%, the rest is thrown away.
Thrown away.
And I got to tell you, this goes on That's
incredible.
It's so incredible because you got to multiply it. You got to think about how many luxury hotels there are in this city, okay? And you multiply that every day.
Right.
And you think about all that food being thrown away. And then there are people right around the globe, and let's face it, literally around the corner, who are starving, who can't eat. I think eventually they have to make it mandatory. Mandatory that every single hotel and restaurant is part of some food recycling, something. I mean, I know that there's volunteer things and there's little...
Well, there's Harvest Now.
Yeah, Harvest Now. There are little organizations that do this, but you know what? It's insane.
Even all the fruit that goes bad in supermarkets.
Please, all of it. The idea that
I go to a supermarket and 50 of the avocados are going bad.
Well, and that,
somewhere between, you know.
That's my point.
Good food, though.
Well, that's my point. It's good food to somebody who doesn't have the money for food. And I'm just saying.
It's all thrown out. They pick through whatever's bad, throw it out.
There's got to be.
All the time.
I foresee a future where that type of living will just be something like going out in the sun without sunscreen. It'll just be like, yeah, back in the day, we used to waste food. Like, can you believe it? You know? And I have to say that along with, talking about the water wars here in this country, in the poor areas, in the ghetto, is where they turn on hydrants and blast water all day.
Right.
Okay. Meanwhile, around the world, they're having to sell water from one country to another because of droughts, and then other places where they can't get it. At least Barcelona has the money to negotiate for water from Marseille.
Well, they have the money and technology for desalination,
and the infrastructure to disperse it. I'm just saying, you know, life is like science fiction.
Yeah. That reminds me of a movie called, remember the guys, remember Soylent Green?
Of course, come on. We just did a Charlton Heston special 2-3 weeks ago, and you missed that, eh?
You know what someone else told me, Mike? They said they finally got that gun out of Charlton Heston's hand.
Oh, stop. I told that joke.
You did?
Nice.
So bad. We're so bad.
That was me. I said that. I saw it on a blog. Somebody said, does that mean...
Well, you saw it on a blog, or someone told me that just the other day.
So we finally can get that gun.
We love Charlton Heston as much as we love Danny.
So, and by the way, on Monday when I play my Lalo Schifrin special, I am going to also...
On Monday?
I'm sorry.
Wednesday?
On Wednesday, when I play my Charlton... My Lalo Schifrin...
Mike is losing it.
I'm losing it.
Totally losing it.
When I play my Lalo Schifrin special...
I gotta ask you, what is one of your favorite Lalo Schifrin film scores?
Enter the Dragon.
Lalo Schifrin scores? I have to say Magnum.
One of your favorite film scores. Because he's a great composer.
He is great.
Other
people calling. We gotta take a couple calls here. Hello, you're on the air. Hello.
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 Hello. Yes.
Hi, Mike.
All right, who's this?
Padme.
Padme.
Hey. Wow, George probably just shot up like a bolt. Padme, are you there with the bodyguard?
Yes, I am.
Wow, you guys are listening to the show?
Yes, we are.
Oh.
You have a boyfriend?
So yes, of course. She's got a bodyguard and boyfriend. Now,
let me
ask you a question, Padme. Do you have
my
a defined?
He's
your husband now?
Yeah.
Oh, congratulations!
You married
your bodyguard.
Whoa.
Padme's off the market now, George. Sorry.
What does he look like?
Yeah. He's so handsome. No.
Is he naked right now?
He's naked right now.
I wish he was, but no.
Oh, can you tell him to get naked now for me?
All right, hold on. Babe, get naked now.
Oh, dear.
Please.
He said no.
He turns around
and
says, what are you listening to, right, Chip?
Those freaks.
Exactly.
Nobody touched nothing.
Shut up. So, Padme, do you have a defining moment?
I have many, but I have to say it was the day maybe I met him.
Really? So talk to me. How did it go? Because I know there was a Yoda connection.
Yes, there was a Yoda connection. And me and Yoda, we went separate ways. And then, I had been friends with my husband for a long time. And then, it just sprouted out of friendship. One day, I was, upset talking to him, and the next thing I knew...
He was taking your clothes off.
Exactly.
I knew it. I knew it.
Why can't he take his clothes off, then?
You know what? His nickname is Le Animal.
No, that's my nickname.
All right, so the defining moment was meeting him, or was that one afternoon where you guys went from friends to more than just friends?
Yeah, it was definitely them because, I've been it's really rough out there to find, just a really nice guy. And, I mean, Mike, you've met him.
Yes.
You know, nice, how hard is it to find a guy like that,
Yeah, actually, Mike did tell me how hot he is.
Yeah, I know Mike has a hot for him, too. Sorry,
I know
Mike.
He does.
I've been trying to get Elena to go out with me so that, we can become more than just friends.
I could mount the reality.
You could meld the reality?
Mount.
Oh, the reality. I thought you were going to do some shape-shifting. So go ahead.
That, too.
Padme. So that was the defining moment?
Oh, yeah. He totally changed, my life, I really knew what it was like to be happy with someone.
So where is he from?
He's from California.
Oh.
Yeah.
And so are y'all here, or?
Yes, yes, we're here now. Yeah. We live on, we're living on the island.
On the island? That sounds cute.
You live on Staten Island?
Yes.
Still cheap to be there. Still cheap to live in Staten Island. It's probably the cheapest place in New York now to live.
Oh, yeah.
Everything's gone up so much. So, Padme, so have you guys been listening all this time?
On and off,
intermittently.
Yeah, because our jobs, coincide with the show, so like we're usually in bed by like 10.
So why are you guys up tonight? Who got fired?
No, I'm off. I'm on vacation for a little while.
Oh, hello, you on the air?
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, who's this?
I've been listening off and on during. Well, I listen to you regularly.
Okay.
I was kind of drifting to sleep, but I heard you mention something about a Star Trek movie.
Yes.
I didn't know there was another one coming along. Will this be the Jean-Luc Picard crew?
No, this is going to be the origin of the original crew.
The origin of the Kirk crew, in other words.
The Kirk crew, yes.
Okay.
The Academy days.
That sounds good. Mm-hmm. Number two, I want to say one other thing. I love this show because of the range that you cover in the course of a couple of hours. That rap you gave on food and water was just like so on the bullseye. I really appreciate that.
Okay, thank you.
And my defining moment. I was 11 years old. I got caught in the crossfire of a bad divorce. One day I went to school and an angry father snatched me and sent me to a foreign country.
Are you serious?
Dead serious. You want the real story? Parents separated. On the run with my mother. Father's a cop. I'm giving you just the highlights. Father's a cop. Total lunatic. Really bad man, did bad things to people who were small, weak, and couldn't defend themselves. But once again, this had a defining moment in two respects. I witnessed a person cling to a dream of a marriage that had no basis in reality. The good thing, I never got married. I go to school on December 13th. I come out of school. My father knocks down my grandmother. Next thing I know, I'm in Trinidad. In an all-boys school that's an offshoot of a monastery. Now, the cool thing about this was, aside from the fact that it blew my mind completely, it did two things for me. I'm an adult now, I look back on it. When I listen to people talk about the rest of the world, Americans, people in that part of the world, it's astonishing the things they will say about people they never met, they never seen, and they know nothing about. More importantly, the inability of most Americans to see anything from any perspective but their own is absolutely frightening to me at times. I've got a friend concerning this Iraq war. Some of the stuff he's got to say about people in that part of the world, I just kind of look at him. And for a guy who's never been out the tri-state area, I wonder where it comes from. But the good thing that came from it, I've got a weird thing about me where, okay, like a lot of people, I don't really produce too much without pressure. But when things are at their very worst, I have a tendency to be at my very best because I landed at that school and I was the closest thing to complete anarchy those people had ever seen. I broke out of the place 18 times successfully out of 20 attempts.
Broke, when you say broke out.
I mean that it was a school. Okay, the name of the school is Mount St. Benedict, the Abbey School. It was on top of a mountain. It was off to a monastery. Hello.
Nacho Libre is what you were living.
Okay. Actually, Papillon is what comes to mind because
really?
The island wasn't far away.
Wow.
It's off the coast of French Guiana, which is about maybe a couple hundred miles up the coast of South America. Trinidad's the last stop before South America. Next stop, Venezuela. And there was no Hugo Chavez then. Let me continue. I don't mean to bore you with all this. I'm just trying to say that what happened was basically during the breakouts, they had a reservoir, and they had basically you had a school on top of a mountain with a mountain range behind it and a valley. You had to get across the valley to get to San Fernando, which was the closest major city to that, to that location. And the way we used to do it was, I was the smallest kid in the school, but I led a breakout. You separate the men from the boys when it's time to slide across a pipe.
You led a breakout?
Yeah. I wasn't saying. They didn't like me. I didn't like them. I wasn't Catholic. I kept leaving. They kept dragging me back in handcuffs, and I couldn't understand. I went there and looked at Father Bernard. I just said, you people hate me. Why do you keep dragging me back? Of course, I was a child. I didn't realize I can go into the rainforest of Trinidad, fall into a valley, break a leg, and the jungle will consume me within 2 weeks. I'll just never be found. But hey, I'm operating like a kid. They had a reservoir. It was on the other side of the valley. And they had a pipe that led to the school and supports on it. And because I was small, I could slide across this pipe, which about 200 feet in the air off the bottom of the valley, and climb over there and get out. Whenever they sent people to chase us, they were adults. They absolutely couldn't do this, so we bought a three-hour lead on them. But I guess the best example I can give you is this. You know that in Caribbean countries, pretty much you have a dry season and a rainy season. Dry season, you have brush fires like what you've seen in California. And it's a weird thing because you can be walking down a road and see where a fire started from a piece of glass, burned for 50 feet, and then burned itself out because one of the three things it needed, either air, fuel, and heat, either ran out. It's a weird thing. So these things can start for any reason. We got caught in a brush fire in front of us. We tried to come back to the school, and it had burned fast enough that it confused us, and we bypassed the turnoff to get to the school, and we started following the trail that took us back down into the valley. The four guys I was with fell to their knees and began to pray to the Virgin Mary. I didn't think it was very productive. I looked around, and it was smoky. We could feel heat. We were very scared. And all of a sudden, the smoke cleared, and I could see the steeple of the monastery and see the cross. And I realized it was in the wrong place. It was off to my right. It should be on my left. And I managed to get them together. We went back as far, close as we could to where the fire was, climbed up the side, bushwhacking, like it's a switchback trail on the side of a mountain. Climbed up and then climbed over the fence to get back into the school. I learned a good thing of that place, though. You know, bureaucracies, they don't so much fear dysfunction, but they fear anarchy. Supervisors and people like, they fear anarchy more than anything else. So, the end result, things are at their worst, I tend to be at my best. That was my defining moment.
Well, thank you, sir.
Mm.
And what's your name?
I'm Max with Co-op City, man.
Max from Co-op City?
Co-op City, man. He's in Freedom Land.
Oh, please.
They want You're living in Freedom Land.
Let me tell you, they want to privatize this place and gentrify it. Yeah, Freedom, you wait and see.
No, as a matter of fact, if you go to YouTube, there's a video of Freedom Land, and you can see what used to be there before it was Co-op City. What section are you in? Section 5.
Section 5, which was all Freedom Land. Yeah, definitely.
Did you go to Truman High School?
No, I did not. I went to a place that's a pig farm now. I went to something called Harron High School.
You went to the pig farm?
It's now part of John Jay's Community College.
Pig farm?
Mm. Yeah.
Well, I went to Truman High School, so.
Well, Harron was an all-boys school, and I'll close on this. Harron is the only all-boys school that ever played Clinton for the basketball championships.
Uh-huh.
We won the game, and we won the fight afterward, too. Talk to you guys later.
Thank you, sir.
Take it easy. Oh, that's funny, man.
Hello, you're on the air.
High school, man. I haven't heard that in a long time.
Hello, you're on the air.
My first defining moment was when I became God conscious.
Yeah, I understand.
God conscious. You have echo?
No.
No.
You need echo to realize it.
We don't have any echo going, sorry. Because we're going to be out of here in about 6 minutes, 7 minutes. You are tuned to Listener Sponsored Radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. This is Night Shift. Next up is Sports Confidential with M. Saida, who's wearing her superhero boots. Sports qualified, I'm sorry. And she's got her superhero boots on. They're silver.
They're telling you.
They're super boots. And Chris?
Yeah.
So how come you didn't come down? You know, there was another Iron Man screening tonight.
Because I would have been like...
You should come down Speed Racers on Saturday. You want to come down for the Speed
Racers? I don't like the way that looks.
Well, it could be
Why?
Good.
You think it's going to be good?
I hope so. I don't know.
Breaker, breaker. Don't get you in the roundabout.
Can I come to the Speed Racers?
Like a vampire on the CG. Breaker, breaker.
Hello, breaker, breaker.
Well, Mike, did you give a defining moment in your life?
You know, I don't know if that
Chris.
I did.
What?
Of course you won't.
No, I will. I will.
You will.
There are several.
You have
when I took a short
respite.
After we took the 2-day film school, I went further and I took a film course and I had to make a short film, silent film. And originally I was going to do like a scene from my script that I, you know, with this movie I wanted to make personals.
Right.
And then an idea came to me to do this silent short film with a voiceover, and making it, editing it, putting it all together, just the whole thing. It was a defining moment for me. It made me realize that this is what I really would want to do for the rest of my life. You know, it's one of those things you think about doing, but then once you did it, once you shot it and you got it and you're editing and you're, you know, doing your, you know, looping and all that you have to do. And I was doing it by hand. I mean, I had, at that point, the teacher's belief was you had to do the hands-on before you get into all the Avid and digital stuff, and I'm glad that I did, because you know, having been an editor here on WBAI and editing on Reel to Reel, you know, those skills came in handy. So I really enjoyed it, and it was definitely a defining moment for me doing that. How's that?
That was good.
That was a good defining moment.
Very good.
But also, I'd say meeting Paul Wonder, probably, you know, my and doing soundtrack, because I had listened to that show, you know, grew up listening to it. So actually coming in the studio where soundtrack had been produced. Elaine, you're very distracting with that shirt on. I just want you to know.
What is he doing? Pulling his shirt up?
And she's
showing. Does that every time.
Yes, she does. She's stretching.
She likes to distract us.
I will attack her after the show. But you're tuned to listen to Sponsored
Radio. My hair is big,
Chris. WBAI, 99.5 FM.
It would be your defining moment.
Take the last two calls. Hello, you're in the air. All right. Hello, you're in the air. Hello.
212-209-2900.
One last thing.
What?
Justice League, what happened?
What do you mean, what happened? You mean to the comic?
No, the movie.
I don't know. They're not ready to do Justice League. It's going to be tough. I think they're smarter to roll them out individually. Like, just like Marvel is doing now with Hulk and Iron Man, they're reinventing Hulk, and they're going to have Iron Man guest star in the Hulk movie and slowly build the universe. I think that's better.
Yeah.
You spend a whole lot of money. It's the balance that Bryan Singer gave in X-Men. You can see how hard it was, even after it was established when what's-his-name stepped in for the third movie. It just didn't have that cohesiveness. Mm-hmm. You know, having all those characters, mm-hmm. you know, it's sort of like, you know, Melrose Place or something, where you've got all these characters and all these dramas mm-hmm. and things going on, and you've got to care, and you've got to give everybody a little arc, and you've got to give everybody a little something, and then it's got to intertwine, and it's still got to work within the theme of the movie, and it's not
really
easy.
Tough.
It's tough, especially tough. With heroes that, you know, who knows who's Hawkman, you know.
It was the problem with the gentleman. What was the with Sean Connery?
And that had going for it that you knew all these characters, iconic characters from out history. Anyway.
He did, but it was still awkward.
It just didn't quite work.
I laughed so hard.
I just watched it actually recently.
I like the movie, but I laughed so hard in the film. I don't know. Everything just seemed very funny to me. I don't know when we were fighting and everything.
Well. Our website is
lifeislikesciencefiction.com.
You can go there and listen to shows going back
Julie
to May of last year.
Michael.
What's that?
Julie was great because Ben Affleck and J-Lo were actually in love.
Is this Jeff? Jeff is going to tell
me. Oh,
Jeff is going to tell me how.
How did that happen?
Jiggly was great. All right, anyway. it's like, yeah, Jiggly was great because, you know, and no acting on anybody's part.
that's not necessary anyway.
Oh, that's funny. Elena, I need your address.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait for my present.
Get it out over the air, Elena.
No, Mike, when you get off, call me, and then I'll get it from Elena.
I will do that
before you leave.
He'll be getting off after he's with me.
No, I'll put it in the mail tomorrow, so you should have it by the end of the week.
Hooray! You turned me on, Chris, especially with presents.
You tuned to listen to Sponsored Radio, WBAI, and you can email us at nitesifftz@aol.com. The website is lifeislikesciencefiction.com, and our hotline, if you want to leave us a message, 212-209-2925.
And if you want to see what Joe's up to, that's Fears Mag, right?
Yes, Fears Mag.
FearsMag.com.
We've got a link on our site for that.
We miss you, Joe. Where are you?
You still need my pictures.
Yes, we do. I was supposed to take pictures of Elena, and she backed out.
No, I did not.
She backed out at the last minute.
What? Oh, what? Like nude or something?
Yes, we're going to have the nude Elena photo shoot.
That's about it.
It'll be up on the website, the videos, the behind the scenes. Until next week.
Bye.
Bye, Chris. Bye, Padme. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
I'm glad you called, Padme.
remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.